Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. We're also brought to you in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever, my partner, Jeff Rimebold. And we are here to look back on the most incredible week one in the NFL. Jeff, this is why we love this sport so much. I mean, it was just serving up close game after close game, thrilling storylines, amazing plays, great comebacks. We had everything that's great about the NFL encapsulated into one weekend.
You know, it was amazing, Neil, when you look at it. And there were some games that certainly went as we thought they would go, but, you know, so many dramatic turns and so many, you know, just games that went down to the wire. Even like the Seattle game, I thought you were going to have to get out a little Grey Poupon for that hat of yours.
There was actually a point, Jeff, where I, you know, you know how busy it is in a studio on a Sunday night in Sky, and I was sitting there thinking, do you know, I really like that hat, and I'm hoping to sort of get a couple more vacations out of it, but I'm going to have to slice it up. And I thought I actually started to think, do I put salsa on it or do I put a bit of ketchup on it? What's going to be the easiest way to get this hat down? It got that close because the Dolphins were playing the Seahawks really hard, and actually they should have won that game, Jeff. They had a field goal block, Kenny Stills with the terrible drop. It was that kind of week, wasn't it, where, you know, they always talk about the fine margins in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a fine line between winning and losing every weekend, and I know that's a cliche that they say, but in pro football, Neil, I'm telling you, it is hard to win games. And even when you're a team like Seattle at home against a new program in Miami, and everything, and all the prognosticators are telling you that, you know, it should be a cakewalk, it's never easy. I mean, it is hard to win football games in pro football.
Just in case I make that kind of prediction again, what's your recommended sauce to go with a straw hat?
Well, I think since it's a straw hat, you got to put a little salsa on it, a little salsa.
Not too spicy, though. Not too spicy. Jeff, we will get into some of the games in the Inside the Huddle podcast. But as you know, we don't delve into every single game. We like to pick talking points. And Jeff, I want to talk to you. You kind of just mentioned it there a little bit with the Dolphins and how they left opportunities on the field and they could have beaten the Seattle Seahawks. Number of games around the NFL were that way this week. You look at Carolina, Graham Gano misses the field goal in Denver at the end. Chandler Catanzaro misses a field goal for Arizona. Jacksonville, you could argue, should have beaten the Green Bay Packers. Very well could have beaten the Green Bay Packers. So how do you deal with that as a coach? Because is it sometimes, I wonder if it's, obviously you can look at the positive and say, well, we played the Green Bay Packers really tough. Or you can look at it and say, we had the Green Bay Packers and we didn't win. I mean, it must be, again, there's that kind of balancing act and it depends from team to team. But can there be a big letdown when you lose a game you should have won?
Well, you know, we're dealing with that this week ourselves, Neil. We had a chance to go up in Toronto and sweep them for the season series and take first place in the East and didn't get it done. Had the game at hand at halftime and couldn't close it out, you know, just made too many mistakes. And, you know, what you got to do in these situations is learn from it, take out the positives, you know, take out the things that you didn't do well so you can improve on those. And then you got to keep moving, because if you dwell on it and you allow it to fester, you know, it can be really a problem over the course of your season. Remember, it's a 16-game season. It's not a one-game season. It's a 16-game season. You have to grow over the course of the season. Even if you win in the first game, the key thing is now not to focus on the W, but focus on where you can improve, because it's going to be a long, long season. You think about teams like the Saints, who really should have won that football game. Yeah. And, you know, they had the Raiders on the ropes, couldn't close them out. Now they've got to deal with that psychological baggage. I really think Sean Payton is talking to his team about, hey, listen, we put ourselves in a position to win the football game. That's what we need to do every week. We didn't get it done. Now where can we clean things up to make sure we don't have that same problem again?
I listened to Todd Bowles' press conference after the Jets game against the Bengals, because, again, the Jets, Jeff, they had their opportunities. They probably should have won that game against Cincinnati, and they didn't get it done at the end. Fitzpatrick throws a late interception. Josh Shaw comes up with a pick for the Bengals. But Todd Bowles said that exact same thing. He said, well, you can talk, you can use the words, we let it get away or whatever it was, but it's just one game and we've got to put it behind us and move on to week two. And I think last year, Jeff, we saw it with, look how poor Detroit were in the game at Wembley, and then they come out and win six of their last eight. Look at Kansas City. They came in, what, they opened 1-5 last year, and they win 10 in a row at the end of the regular season. So, you know, we're going to see different teams, you know, the makeup of teams change over the coming months.
Yeah, and, you know, you got the injury factor you're going to deal with, and again, it's not who wins the first week. It's who's playing the best football when we get into November and December when the games are biggest and who's healthiest. Those are the things you got to focus on right now. Keep yourself in the hunt. If you're on a run, stay on a run. If you start out, you know, with a loss, hey, let's rebound. We got to go on to next week and even up the score and then, you know, keep playing. It's just such a, you know, it's so different, really, in some ways, Neil, for the fans than it is for the players, because the fans will dwell on that loss or that win over the course of the week. But for the players and the coaches, you have to wash yourself of it. You got to get it out of your system as fast as you can, because it's right to the, I mean, your prep days are very short. You got to be back and ready to play again next Sunday.
Jeff, another thing with coaches they have to deal with is injuries. How do you, have you been in situations where you've seen players, it always feels worse when it's right at the start of the season. Last year we saw Terrell Suggs go down early for the Baltimore Ravens. This year, it's, Brian Cushing's out for what, 5 or 6 weeks for the Houston Texans with an MCL tear. Robert Griffin III, we don't know, he's been put on IR at the moment with that shoulder injury with the Cleveland Browns. And we do know that Keenan Allen is out for the season. Devastating loss to the San Diego Chargers. And I just wanted to ask you, as soon as I saw this on Sunday night, I was watching the footage coming into our Sky Studios and Keenan Allen was in tears. And I thought, how do you walk into that locker room as a coach? What do you even say to that guy who missed 8 games last year with a lacerated kidney? It just must be so tough.
Yeah, it is tough because, you know, these guys work so hard, and especially a guy like Keenan who's coming off of an injury and, you know, has gone through the rehab process, all the tedious, long hours in the off season, all the pain, all the agony of, you know, working your body back into shape. And then, you know, it really is a reminder to everybody that plays the game or is involved in the game just how fragile, you know, it is, and just how much you are blessed to have an opportunity to play and be healthy from week to week. And, you know, you ask about the impact of injuries. When do you want them in the season? Well, never, obviously. But sure, the thing about it is, early in the season, Neil, you've got a better chance to find other guys because there are more guys. There are some guys on the street. There are some unsigned guys from last year. You know, the practice rosters are full. Now, the challenge is, you know, where can you replace a Keenan Allen? That's a tall order. It's got to be done by committee. They're going to have to get better play out of more guys, and, you know, and that's just the reality of the game. That's, you know, we say all the time about, you know, there are uncontrollable factors, and injuries are uncontrollable factors.
We always talk about it being a quarterback's league, Jeff, and, you know, how much of a difference that one position can make. But I think we also, week one reminded us that this is a team game. There are 53 players on a roster, and I'm looking at 3 games as an example here that we can talk about. Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. So Drew Brees throws 463 yards, 4 touchdowns, or 423 yards and 4 touchdowns, sorry. But the Saints lose to the Oakland Raiders 35-34. The reason, they didn't play any defense. Andrew Luck throws for 385 yards and 4 touchdowns, gets the Colts in front, and then they lose when they don't play any defense at the end and the Lions get into field goal range. And then contrast that with the Minnesota Vikings, who came from behind to beat the Tennessee Titans. And Adrian Peterson has 19 carries, 31 yards. Sean Hill kind of just does enough, but they lent on their defense and they got 2 big defensive touchdowns. There's 3 games right there that emphasize the need for teamwork.
Yeah, you know what? No question about it. And, you know, you can score all the points you want to score. And, you know, Brees throws for over 400 yards and really has a phenomenal day. But if you can't play the other other two facets of the game well. If you're not good in the kicking game and they, you know, missed an opportunity there and you can't play any defense, it's hard to win games. You know, we talk as coaches all the time about the three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. If you, obviously, if you win all three phases, you're going to dominate a game. Win two, you got a chance. Win one, it's going to be a tough struggle. So when you look at games as a coach, I always tend to look at statistically how the game broke down in all three phases. Were they able to make plays in the kicking game? Did they get a turnover? Did they get a big return for a touchdown? What was the field position like? You know, those are the what we call hidden yards in a game, and those are really critical because they set up the offense. Offense, did you turn it over? You know, and then you look at the defense, explosive plays. Did you give up explosive scoring plays? Those are the factors that really come into play when you look in the National Football League. And, you know, you look at that Carolina-Denver game,
yeah.
You know, it's 21-21 in first downs. It's, you know, really an evenly played game, 333 yards to 307. You know, the penalties, eight penalties for Carolina, four for Denver, and turnovers. You know, and then you look at it and you say, how does it balance itself out? How does it, you know, how does the game ebb and flow like that? And it's usually in those little hidden statistics in a game.
Are we worried about Drew Brees and Andrew Luck, Jeff? I feel like they're one-man bands who are going to have this kind of, they're going to have this kind of performance and this kind of game every week.
Yeah, Neil, you know, and that's a tall ask because, you know, obviously when defenses find out that that's what you – that's the only way you can move the football and you get into – it's really difficult to go to a scoring fest every weekend as a quarterback and know that you've got to throw for four, you've got to throw for five, or, you know, that really puts an awful lot of pressure on your offensive football team. Teams that win typically are teams that have balance and that can play both aspects of the game because, you know, there are going to be games, Neil, and we see it every week where, you know, your offense just doesn't show up or the defense is having a tough day and the other side, the other two sides have got to carry them or at least through rough patches of a game, you know, and that's again, the teams that can play that what we call complementary football where the offense, the defense, and the special teams are all serving one goal. And New England probably does that better than any team in the NFL. That's one of the reasons why they're one of the more successful ones.
Right. I mean, New England did it. And as I said, the Vikings, Jeff, they, you know, everything about the Vikings is built around Adrian Peterson. He doesn't get it done, but, you know, they have a what looks like on paper an ugly looking win against Tennessee. But to Mike Zimmer, that was probably a thing of beauty because yeah, Blair Walsh kind of overcame some early misses on field goals and then got the job done, and they got it done on defense. And I'm sure that's warms the cockles of a defensive coach's heart.
Oh, no question, because how do you score? Now, think about this if you're a statistics guy or, you know, fans sitting out there. How do you score 25 points and have 15 first downs?
Yeah.
I mean, the field's 100 yards long, right? So that means you only got – I mean, it's really amazing. And that's where, you know, one side of the ball played complementary to the other side of the ball. Mm. And, you know, as that's got to be just gut-wrenching for those guys in Tennessee. A home opener, you know, all the anticipation of the new running back and, you know, this new defensive system. And I thought their defense played well also. Mm. But, golly, that's got to be tough. But, again, like you said, you got to wash it out because if you carry it into this week, it'll be another bad out.
Jeff, one of the things I was – I think I spoke to you about when I was on my training camp tour was just the level of preparation. You see it from training camp to training camp, how much the coaches work the players. And I said in the summer that if your team made a mistake or did something wrong in the – regular season, I think it a lot of times comes down to execution and not down to preparation. I think teams are so well prepared, generally speaking, across the board. I've heard a couple of American radio stations saying that the Terrence Williams play at the end of the Dallas game is on the player, but also on the coaches. I disagree. I think at some point as coaches, you have to let your players go out and play. What do you think of that play in particular? And are we going to put any of that on Jason Garrett?
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. you talk to players all the time, and you're exactly right. You go through the training camp scenarios and, you know, the endless meetings and situations, and you cover in every possible scenario that can play out in a game. And then during the course of the game, you're always talking about, let's be one play ahead, let's be one situation ahead. And in that case, I'm sure it was communicated to him how they wanted him to handle that situation. I have no doubt in my mind. But there's a thing that we refer to in the business as the fog of war.
Yeah.
And that's where guys just make decisions at critical moments that if you ask them 2 minutes after they make the play, they can tell you what the right thing to do was. Mm. But in the pressure of the moment, in those Frank Gans used to say, in those critical moments when man measures man, guys will just blow it. I mean, we've had it happen to us. It happened to us last week in a critical moment. Guy jumps into a wrong gap and you know, we get hurt. And you talk to them on the sideline, and they know as soon as they do it, they knew what they did wrong.
Well, Jeff, that's really interesting, because when I was on the tour a couple of weeks ago, and obviously spending time just sitting on the bus, and you know, I like to listen just to the stories the guys are telling, and listening to Greg Jennings and your guy Nick Ferguson, who did a great job, was, you know, talking about his 10 years in the NFL and in NFL Europe, and we got to talking about players like Anthony Darble and Moritz Boehringer, who were trying to make it from the amateur leagues here into the NFL at the time. And all those guys were saying about, when you get to the NFL, you have to just act and not think. And I guess with Terrence Williams, this is one of the times where you needed to act and think, because obviously a lot of the times your instinct, as you said, just takes over. But this is one of those situations where you need to be acting and thinking.
Yeah. You know, you have to know at all times what the situation is. Now, we talked earlier about complementary football, how one side plays to the other side. And then you're always putting players in scenarios in practice. Neil, I know you've seen it in training camp, where it's a situation where you need to get out of bounds with the football. And, you know, you practice that over and over and over again. Every day on the practice field, we have a six-play series where it's a situation. We're up by five with 1:15 to go. We're down by three with 2 minutes to go. Whatever it is, you constantly play out those scenarios so that when players get into these moments, you are as well prepared as you can be. But that still doesn't eliminate the human factor. Mm. And as long as they're human beings, they're going to be mental errors. What Von Clausewitz called the fog of war. It's just natural. It happens in the game. That's the human factor. That's one of the reasons why we love to watch the game, because you're going to see those kinds of things.
And that's why we see those comebacks as well, Jeff. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one's flawless in the NFL. But one thing that's interesting to me, you said that you think he would have still been reminded ahead of that drive to get out of bounds. Do you do that? I mean, we all watch. We know it's obvious. But as coaches, are you constantly reaffirming the message, even though it's very obvious?
Without a doubt. And, you know, in every situation, when you're on the sidelines, let's say you're a defensive coach, and now you're going into 2 minute, right? You're going into this kind of scenario. What you're coaching your guys are, first thing, we can't do, nothing over our head. Next thing, tackle them in bounds. Mm-hmm. Next thing, get up slow. You know, again, it's all of those factors that you continually reiterate to the player. And then I'm sure that the Cowboy coaches on the sidelines, the offensive coaches, talk to him and say, okay, now we get the ball, you got to get out of bounds. We have no timeouts. We have one timeout. Edit to a certain, you know, yard stripe, because that's where our guy has the best chance to, you know, get the field goal. We need to move it to this hash. Whatever it is, all of that stuff gets talked about on the sidelines, because particularly in the NFL, where you have such big staffs and so many people and all that technology, there should be no confusion about what the situation is in the last minute of a game.
No. What was one of the themes, Jeff, was young quarterbacks going into week one. What was your thoughts on the young quarterbacks? I mean, we can start with the guys that were making their first starts, but then I think we can extend this out to Jameis Winston, Blake Bortles, Derek Carr. We forget that these guys are only, you know, year two and three guys, and, you know, certainly in Jameis' case, very impressive after a little slow start there. He had four touchdown passes on the road in Atlanta. But maybe you start with the guys that we were talking about last week. So the Jimmy Garoppolos, the Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, those kind of players that had to make their first NFL starts. How did you think they did?
Well, I think Garoppolo in particular, was probably the least surprising of all of them to me, because, he's just in that system. He's been in that system. He's watched Brady work. He understands. I thought they did an outstanding job of making it easy for him, giving him, what he could do. And I think that's part of the reasons why he had the success that he had. Now, you look at the other guys, and I thought Carson Wentz's first outing was, went real well. And, particularly because, you look at it, Neil, he only had one preseason game.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that's against, you're talking about going against the Browns, and that's certainly not, the best defense he's going to face all year. But, you can't blame him for who he's playing, right? So I think he had a good outing. You look at the other guys, I think that there's a really good rising class of young quarterbacks in the league. Mm. You talk about Carr. I thought Mariota played well. I think Blake Bortles showed that he can lead a team and can make all the throws that you need a guy to make. And, as you go through it, there's, I think, evidence that this is a good young class of quarterbacks coming into the league. And, there are some that, were a little bit shaky in their opening. Dak didn't exactly light it on fire.
No.
But again, what do you expect out of a kid? He's a fourth-round draft choice now.
But I like the way he carried himself, Jeff. I thought he stood strong in the pocket, and I thought he started strong, and then some inaccuracies started to come into it. I mean, there was a couple where he overthrew Cole Beasley, and there was one behind Jason Witten. But generally, for a first start, I would have, if you were saying pass or fail, I'd say just about pass. But I'm intrigued to see what he does going forward. I did like the way he carried himself.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with you. I think he's got that kind of, that it factor. And again, that's a lot of pressure. You're playing a traditional rival in the opening game, and again, with all the expectations and all the focus is on you, and to go out there and handle himself as well as he did. Now, he's not going to make every throw, and no quarterback does, but he's certainly going to be scrutinized on every throw. And, I think that this was a good start for him to put a team in position to win the football game. And when we talk all the time, how do you judge a quarterback? The ultimate evaluation of everybody in pro football is, do you win or do you not win? Mm. Not how many yards you throw for, did you win the game?
Yeah.
And so he put his team in a position to win the football game.
And you got to look at him and say, I know each circumstance is different on each team, but the Eagles felt that Carson Wentz was good enough in the end to put into the lineup, and they trade away Sam Bradford. Dak Prescott has got the nod ahead of Mark Sanchez, who's a veteran quarterback. And I'm just looking through the glass doors of where I'm recording this podcast, Jeff, and I'm seeing Jared Goff in street clothes for the Monday night game against San Francisco. The Rams gave up a lot for that guy, and he's not really close to the field yet.
Yeah, there's going to be some, there's going to be some talk now, because here you go, you draft, do it, like you say, gave up a lot to get him in the first pick in the draft, and then he's in street clothes on the sidelines, and you go out and score a whopping nothing.
Yep.
And so you got to, that's not going to be, that'll get chewed up in the media, and that'll get chewed up, across the talk shows and, all over the world. And and Rams fans are, if you're not going to score points, then they're going to start clamoring for that guy. And, that's just the nature of the business as it goes.
You mentioned Derek Carr, Jeff, and what toughness he showed a couple of times. First of all, he's leaping over players on scrambles. Derek, don't do that anymore. We were impressed the first time, but that's enough of that. That was incredible to see him do that. But then he gets absolutely nailed on the touchdown pass to Seth Roberts. And his linemen are having to help him up off the ground, Jeff. And then he throws the two-point conversion to Michael Crabtree. So first of all, Derek Carr really showed that it factor that we talk about with quarterbacks, the toughness, the moxie, the leadership. All of that was there. But then what about Jack Del Rio rolling the dice? And, you can see the logic. You can see the logic, though, Jeff, because it's, do I want to take on one of the worst defenses in the NFL, or am I giving it back to Drew Brees? I know he still gave it back to Brees with the chance to win with a field goal, but you know, this meant that if the Saints didn't get the field goal, it wasn't a tie, the Raiders were going to win it. You've got to admire that kind of aggression.
Yeah, you know what? And then, and Neil, there's really kind of a philosophy or a coaching saw or whatever you want to call it, that when you play on the road and you get in these types of situations, that's when you go for two. That's when you push the envelope to win games. At home, you play a little more confident, a little more conservative typically, because you've got the home crowd, you've got all of that, right? Mm. So on the road, you don't play so much for the, you know, for the overtime. You play to, you know, and I sound like Herman is, you play to win the game. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
You're more aggressive typically on the road than you would be at home. You know, hey, let's talk about Osweiler, huh? There's one we haven't talked about. You know,
Jeff, just 1 second. One more question on the Jack Del Rio thing, and then move on to Brock Osweiler for sure, because I think this is interesting. Are there coaches in the NFL, in your opinion, that wouldn't make that call? Because if you fail the unconventional way, you get into trouble. If you fail through convention, it's not so bad. If you step out of that box and then you fail, so I wonder if there's coaches around the league that wouldn't make that call.
You know, it's really, really interesting that you say that, because I've had, you know, conversations just sitting around the table with June Jones and Jerry Glanville and two guys that were head coaches in the NFL, you know, for, I guess, four different places. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about that, because that had come up in a game. And what you see in guys that are either a little bit uncertain about their place in the league or their place in the organization, or in a real, you know, they may not be real, their job may not be real secure, typically they're going to do it by the book way, because you open yourself up for less scrutiny. Now, certainly when Jack made that move, he opened himself up for a lot of it and a lot of controversy. But I think, number one, he feels confident with his football team, feels confident with his, you know, his quarterback, and feels confident, you know, with where he is right now in that organization. There are other guys that maybe wouldn't have played it out that aggressively because they don't want to deal with the potential aftermath of, you know, what could have, you know, blown up in his face. Now, again, a lot comes down to how you play the game, how you coach the game. You look at the great ones. You look at Belichick. He's renowned for going for it on fourth down. You look at Pete Carroll, got himself got criticized, you know, for a year after the decision to throw it on the goal line when he had Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. But he did what he thought was best for his football team and never looked back. Didn't shrink from the criticism, never looked back.
All right, let's talk about Brock Osweiler, Jeff. Then he made his 8th NFL start, and then we'll move on and make our picks for week 2. What did you think about Brock as he led the Texans to victory over the Chicago Bears?
Well, I think, number one, he won the game. That's the first most important thing. And then you look at him statistically, you know, he's 22 of 35, 231, two touches, and only an interception. And, you know, he showed some mobility and got out of the pocket one time at a 15-yard scramble. So, you know, I thought there was enough there to make you think, hey, this team has a chance, you know, because you see Will Fuller, you know, catches 5 balls for 107, Miller rushes for over 100. That's balance that they have not had in Houston and that they need. Now, their defense, you know, again, losing Cushing hurts them, but, you know, they've got a good defense down there. So I think that was a really positive start for Brock.
All right, let's move on to week 2 in the NFL then, Jeff. We're going to make our picks. I went 10-6 in week 1. You went 8-8. So but like you said,
I'm just hoping for a wild card. I'm hoping for a wild card spot at 8-8.
Exactly. And this is exciting for you, Jeff. You'll be interested and pleased to know the Color Rush jerseys return on Thursday night. We'll get your pick on that in a second, but the reason I mention this is because now here in the UK, you can buy your Color Rush jerseys. So you can buy the jerseys, you can buy the headwear. So you can go to europe.nflshop.com. So if you want your Color Rush jerseys, Jeff, do you want? I'm going to go full Color Rush get up, I think. You know, the mustard ones that the Jags wore that time.
That'll go well with with your straw hat.
Yes.
Hey, you know what? But I'll tell you what, if you're a fan, aren't those jerseys, that whole thing is really a cool idea. And I think that, you know, if you're a fan, if you're a real fan, you're gonna get your color rush jersey and get it on and you know, sit there and watch You on Sky on Sunday night.
There you go. I was going to repeat the web address, but you can just hit that little button that takes the podcast back 30 seconds. So do that and you can listen to where you get your Color Rush jerseys. Let's start with week two then. The New York Jets at the Buffalo Bills. The Bills have given Ryan Fitzpatrick some worries, Jeff, the last couple of times they've played them. Beat the Jets last year in week 17. But the Bills didn't impress me in week one. Who do you like in this one?
Boy, I tell you what, you know, we talked about the Bills' struggles, you know, in the off season and through training camp, and I saw enough out of the Jets to make me believe that they're good enough to go up and win in Buffalo.
All right, so you're going Jets. I'm going to say that Buffalo get the win at home. They did play some good defense against Baltimore, but the Jets will provide a test. Our first game on Sunday on Sky Sports, Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. AJ Green is going to really test this secondary. He had 12 catches, 180 yards, and a touchdown last week against Darrell Revis, but Pittsburgh's offense looks the real deal to me, Jeff. I'm going Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was really impressed watching them last night. I thought that their defense had, you know, had Washington really frustrated. And, you know, I thought, again, everybody talks about their offense. We know how good they are offensively, but I thought their defense has really made major strides in a year. So, I'm going to take Pittsburgh at home.
All right, both going Pittsburgh in that one. Tennessee at Detroit. So, Matthew Stafford with the late game heroics gets Detroit off to a 1-0 start. Remember, they won 6 of their last 8 last year as well, Detroit. I'm going Detroit to win at home.
Yeah, this is a huge game, you know. If Tennessee, you know, and they're talking about making noise in that division, they need to get a win here. You don't want to start out 0-2. But I just think that, you know, again, this is going to be a tough one to call. I'm going to take Tennessee, though, to win on the road.
All right. There was quite a lot of road winners in week one, so we could see that in week two. Baltimore at Cleveland, they'll fancy their chances of winning on the road against the Browns. No Robert Griffin III for Cleveland. Who do you like in this one, Jeff?
I like Baltimore. I just think Cleveland's, you know, again, this is going to be one of those, you know, total rebuilds, and it's going to take time.
All right, both going Baltimore in that one. Dallas at Washington is a 1 o'clock kickoff, 6 p.m. in the UK. Washington weren't impressive, were they, Jeff? And Dallas, they had that chance to win the game against the Giants. I'm going to stick with Washington, though. I feel like they've still got the talent, but it's not as easy to make that pick now after seeing them in week one.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you, Neil. I was really disappointed with the way they played, and then, you know, Dallas played better defense than I thought they would play, but I got to take the Skins at home.
All right, both going Washington in that one. Let's move on to New Orleans at the New York Giants. So there wasn't as much pass rush of Dak Prescott as I expected from this defense that was upgraded to the tune of $200 million in the offseason. But, Jeff, they did play tough against the run, and they did generally look better across the board on defense. Do they have enough at home to beat Drew Brees and the Saints?
Well, to me, the question is, do the Saints have enough defense to you know, hold off New York? So, I think, you know, you got to prove it to me yet. So yeah. I'm going to take New York at home.
Yeah, I'm going to take New York as well. Just watching highlights of the Saints giving up lots of big plays in the next room. San Francisco at Carolina. So San Francisco have to go east after their big win on Monday Night Football. I'm going to go Carolina.
Carolina.
All right, both going Carolina in that one. Miami at New England. So the Dolphins, what a tough start for the Dolphins. They go at Seattle and now at New England. And you can't use they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo. They don't have Tom Brady. Now they've got Jimmy Garoppolo because Jimmy got the job done. I'm going to bow to you to go first on this one, Jeff.
Well, I think New England at home, my birds tell me that Gronk's getting better. He may play in this one. And I think if he plays, that tilts it certainly tilts it to New England's favor. And, you know, again, I think Adam Gase, I give him a lot of marks because he's really improved that football team's mental toughness and competitiveness.
All right, I'm going New England as well. Kansas City at Houston is a repeat of the wild card game last year in the playoffs. Alex Smith was outstanding, Jeff, leading the Chiefs back. But he had to lead them back because they made a slow start. But he ended up close to 400 yards passing, a couple of touchdowns, and he gets the rushing touchdown to win. J.J. Watt, incidentally, had half an assist, one assisted tackle in week one. So very un-J.J. Watt-like. It's a tough one to call, this one. Who do you like, Jeff?
Well, you know, I agree with you. I thought Kansas City was really disappointing early rally, but I like what I see in Houston, and I think Houston, especially at home.
Yeah, I'm going to go Houston as well, just because of that home field advantage and the fact that they've got some more weapons now around the quarterback, and they've got a quarterback in Brock Osweiler. Seattle at Los Angeles Rams is our second game on Sky Sports. Looked like a good one, Jeff, until we now see the big fat goose egg that the Rams laid on Monday Night Football, and Russell Wilson's banged up. But I do still think we're going to see that excitement of the Rams returning to LA, and the Rams traditionally over recent years have played so well against Seattle. So this is going to be a much closer game, but I'm going to go for Seattle to spoil the party.
This is the ultimate trap game. Mm. I mean, this is a absolute trap game. You're Seattle, you know, you're coming off of the win. St. Louis looked awful. You're gonna show that film to your players all week long, and you know that can lead to overconfidence. You're at home for the first time, but I just don't see enough in St. Louis's offense to you know, the Seattle defense is still pretty nasty.
First of all, you did say trap game, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm just clearing it up because the phone line may have gone a bit funny there, and you just.
That's with a T, Neil.
All right. Just checking, because I think it'd be a better game than that. And you just used had the first of, I'm sure we'll have many this year. You just said that they've got too much for St. Louis.
Oh, shoot. I guess.
I'm going to keep score on that one as well.
It won't be the last.
No, it won't be. And I'll be with you, my friend. Don't worry about that. What about Tampa Bay at Arizona? So the Bucs get one big win on the road. Against Atlanta. This is a different proposition for me, Jeff. I don't see them getting another in Arizona.
Now, this is one of the games that I want to watch Jameis Winston. This is where I want to see him against a good defense on the road. You know, I think Arizona's going to win the football game, but I'm really, really anxious to see how that young quarterback grows.
Yeah, because it's a different proposition, isn't it? You find out a little bit more about him in those situations. Jacksonville at San Diego. So the Jags... Yeah, fine margins again, Jeff. Allen Robinson's a fingertip away from reeling in the game-winning touchdown. They come up just short on fourth and one. I mean, they missed tackle of Eddie Lacy that leads to a Green Bay score. Everything was right there for the Jags, and they didn't get it done. But they showed me enough that they can go. I know it's a tricky trip out west, but they can go out west, and they can beat the San Diego Chargers. I'm going to pick Jacksonville.
Yeah, you got to, because Keenan Allen out of the game. And, you know, again, I think this is a big, big game for Jacksonville, because you got to win now. Mm. You know, this is what we talked about. You're putting yourself in position, but now you got to finalize. You got to win.
Deal,
this would
it?
Be a huge one. Yeah, this would be a huge one on the road.
Yeah, you got to finish the job, get the wins. All right, both going Jacksonville in that one. I'm not sure we've separated on two at the moment so far. Atlanta at Oakland. I was disappointed with Atlanta, Jeff. And I was very impressed with the way Oakland dug deep. They trailed 24-10 at one point on the road. You can talk about the Saints' defense if you like, but, you know, the 24-10 down, I'm looking over and I'm seeing Drew Brees on the other sideline. That's a long way back, and they got back. So, you know, I'm going to take Oakland to beat Atlanta, especially in the black hole.
Yeah, and again, let's make no mistake about it. The Falcons' defense wasn't exactly world beaters in that game either.
Oh,
so,
no. The touchdown they gave up to Charles Sims, where it was a little dump-off pass, and then players were just bouncing off him. I mean, the tackling was terrible.
Yeah, and I'm going to take Oakland at home, like you say, in the black hole. You know, I think this is a really good on-the-come Raider team.
All right, so we're both going Oakland in that one. Indianapolis at Denver. This is last year Indianapolis won this game, but it was in Indianapolis. I find it tough to pick the Colts on the road against the Broncos.
You know, a couple reasons. Defense, number one, and number two, now you're going to find out whether they can really protect or not, because you're going to see, you know, a bunch of stuff from Wade, and you're facing two of the best pass rushers in the National Football League.
All right, so we're both going Denver in that one. Good Sunday night game coming up, Jeff. Green Bay at Minnesota, and the Vikings open their shiny new stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium. They're going to be up for that one, but the Green Bay Packers, again, we talk about Jacksonville, could have won that game. Well, the Packers did win that game in week one, and there's room to improve for the Packers. Jordy Nelson is going to get up to more speed and play better than his 6 catches for 32 yards and a touchdown. Who do you like in the Sunday night game that we got on Sky Sports?
I'm going to take Minnesota because I think you'll see Sam Bradford, and I think, you know, I think that Peterson will have a better day than he did last week, and I think the emotion of playing at home, I'm going to take Minnesota.
All right, I'm going to go Green Bay. So I'm going to have both parties spoiled this week. The Rams returning to L.A. and Green Bay spoiling the party in Minnesota. I'm an old grumpy guts, aren't I? And Philadelphia at Chicago on Monday Night Football to finish things off, Jeff. This is a bit more of a challenge for Carson Wentz. This will make us sit up and take a bit more notice if he wins this one on the road. Although, as you say, the phrase you use, it's, the Bears' defense is not exactly a murderer's row. So who do you like in this one?
You know, I'm going to take the Bears at home. And I'm going to tell you, one of the things that now, you know, the coaches in Vic Fangio and those guys in Chicago will have is they'll have more tape now on Carson Wentz. Mm. So the game plan will be more suited to him because or you see the things that he's uncomfortable with, and you know, the more you're able to really streamline your game plan for him. So I think that the Bears will win at home, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what Fangio and that crew do to try and take this young quarterback and give him a, you know, tough Monday night.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to take one quick question in the mailbag, and then we'll wrap up. So this comes from Liam Dickinson, who says, tackling still seems to be an issue in the NFL when you look at the opening weekend touchdowns. Can the NFL learn anything from rugby to improve this? Well, we know that Pete Carroll has looked at rugby and is trying to install that. But tackling across the board, Jeff, is this just, again, symptomatic of the fact that you can't do as much of it in training camp and in practice?
Yeah, that's part of it. The athletes are better. The rules are more restrictive. I think there's a lot of factors in it, but the biggest one is it's not something you can practice. Mm. And just, Liam, if you don't like the tackling now, you better not be watching in November and December because it doesn't get better during the season. It actually goes the other way because they get less and less, you know, contact. These guys can't be running into each other at full speed, taking each other to the ground during the season, or you won't have anybody left when the playoffs come. So it's just the nature of the business. You coach as much as you can coach on leverage and angles and, you know, all that stuff. But ultimately, to tackle, you got to tackle. And that's the big dilemma.
Jeff, breaking news. I've just had a text message from Martin Johnson. He says, hey, the 49ers are back. He says, unfortunately, I think we're just the best of the worst in the NFC West. How about the Rams? They go all in on Goff, and he doesn't even get dressed. Big trouble in L.A. There you go. Straight from Martin Johnson.
That's a nice take from Martin. I thought Martin was listening to you somehow live, and he had texted in and said, hey, listen, if you need coaching on tackling, send me over there.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a machine.
Oh, he'd get the job.
He could get them right.
Well, yeah, but he always likes to tackle and then grind the face into the dirt, old school style, Jeff. But, you know, coaches wouldn't have a problem with that.
No. Yeah, they would until the yellow flags start coming. And then we, hey, Martin, get over here.
All right. But, Jeff, we're going to just wrap up. What a great week one it was in the NFL. This is the sort of thing we can look forward to every weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I think it's going to be a tremendous season. I think it's going to be you look at the parity around the league. You don't see a dominant team early, and I think that's the way it's going to be throughout the season. So, you know, there are going to be a lot of teams fighting for those playoff spots when we get to November.
All right, so the NFL is back. It came back in true style, and myself and Jeff will be with you every week on Inside the Huddle to break down the big talking points because that's what we love to do, talk with you guys about the NFL. And what a great week it has been this week. Jeff, until next week, when we'll be breaking down week two and previewing week three, say goodbye to our dear listeners.
Aloha.